for the last week or so, I've been in the eye of a storm. I created the storm, and there I am. I'm all in the middle of it. I posted something on the internet, which I think got a tremendous amount of exposure all over. I simply wrote an attack, a vicious attack, against Mishpacha magazine, and in particular, an article, really it's two articles, but people don't know it's three articles by a fellow called Eitan Kobri, that I feel that, you know, the truth has to be said, and you know, when it comes to saying the truth, nothing can stop me from doing that, okay? I'm the knight in shining armor, you understand? So I will only briefly talk about the posting that's now on the internet and prepare you for what may come in the next week or so. There's a lot of stuff on the way. Long as I remain safe and protected here, a lot of people are out after me, and then there are a lot of people, I think, who are with me. Anyway, here is this piece. Number one is a piece that appeared in the Mishpacha magazine about 6-7 weeks ago by a fellow called Eitan Kobri. And I'll tell you what I related to in my last week's post. And then I'm going to talk, the main part of the shiur is there's a second sentence in his hashkofa that just isn't. It just ain't. Now watch. I'll explain. Let's read at the top. No, no, we can go to the we can go to 1, 2, 3, the third paragraph. Third paragraph, even there, the
that's it. Yeah.
In that third paragraph, second sentence, nothing other, are you with me? Third paragraph, second sentence, nothing other than our possession of the Torah plays any role in our national character. Nothing whatsoever. Not a common land. That's where I got shook up completely. Nothing plays a role in our national character other than Torah. That's it. Not a common land, language, and culture. Not winning 4 games or 15 in a baseball competition. Not ranking on some non-Jews list as the world's 8th strongest power. Not being a world leader in high tech, R&D, that's research and development, or on ship, that's all. Or the 21st century Nobel laureates, not even boasting one of the world's best trained and equipped fighting forces. What doesn't this man get? You know what he just did? In this one long run-on sentence, he's taken the awesome outpouring of God's kindness to his people and his blessing and trivialized it into nothing. A mighty fighting force is because God wants it to be a mighty fighting force. How did it happen that a people who for 1900 years had no army in 69 years are able to reach the point that they're the 8th strongest power in the world? How did that happen? There's only one way that it happened. That the Rabbeinu Shalom was fulfilling a promise that he made a long time ago and that we say time and time again in davening and benching, Hashem Oz Liamo Yitain. God gives strength to his people. That's why we have a strong army. He doesn't see it that way. If we're an economic power in the world, It's all the work of God, and it's there in Chumash and in Tanakh. It's all over Chumash and Tanakh. You have to be blind learning Tanakh and not seeing that God is going to bless this country with an abundance in all areas. In the Parsha of Tshuva in Nitzavim, it says, Ubeirach, God will bless after he brings you back to Eretz Yisrael. He will bless pri bitnecha, the fruit of the womb, that we will be a fruitful people. And incidentally, just another little thing to drop in, the most fruitful country in the world today is Eretz Yisrael. Nearly every other country in the world is on a negative reproductive level. They're not replacing themselves. Only one place in the world is the population going up. Guy has to be blind not to see it. And if God says in Torah, Ubeirach, he will bless pri bitnecha, the fruit of your womb, you better believe it. And then it says further on in the pasuk, he will bless pri admotecha, the fruit of your land. God is going to bless it. If this little country where there was no agriculture for 1900 years is today an agricultural global player, it's because the Rebbein Shalom has made it that way. That's his blessing. He's pouring it out to us. Everything that this man has sort of, you know, trivialized, there must be another word, and even, Dismissed. I like that. Dismissed as being unimportant and insignificant. What bothers him if we did win 4 baseball games out of 15? Well, it hurts him. We haven't played baseball for 1900 years, you understand? What bothers him? So everything that I and many like me have for years seen as a clear manifestation of God's presence here in this country, he don't see it, and he's the frummy. In other words, if you say Hallel on Yom Ha'atzmaut with a bracha, you're an RZ, a religious Zionist. But if you don't say Hallel, then you're from. If you dismiss all of God's manifestations in this country for the last 69 years, it's Oyom Venora, it's unbelievable, then you're from. By the way, from this I can understand, if this was the way of thinking 200 years ago, I can understand why Hasidus came into being. An elite that sees everything as Torah. I'm all for Torah, don't get me wrong. Before this guy Kobri was born, I established a yeshiva in Toronto that is teaching hundreds of children Torah ad hayom hazeh. I have thousands of grandchildren, was student grandchildren that are sitting and learning Torah. Nobody has to tell me about Torah. But there's a second mistake he makes, or maybe it's the third or fourth already, I don't know which one. Eretz Yisrael is an integral part of Torah. There's no such thing as Torah without Eretz Yisrael. How can he separate the two? Not a common land. The common land is the fundamental principle of Torah. All of Torah is to be fulfilled in only one place in the world. Here. How does he separate them into two things? There's Torah and there's a land. What's he talking about? Now, 500 years before God gave Torah to the Jewish people, he had already told Avraham Avinu, Lech lecha me'artzecha mimoladetcha, leave your land and your birthplace and go to your... You know, being too frum is very dangerous for your neshama. An inability to see what's taking place before our very eyes. This man is blind. Not a common land. What do you mean not a common land? Not only that, I think I wrote, not only is this the only place in the world where all 613 mitzvahs apply, but it's more than that. It's the only country in the world where it's a mitzvah to live, to the exclusion of all others. What's he talking about? Everything, every aspect of life here that has taken on global proportions has all been described in advance so clearly in Torah and Nevi'im. It's unbelievable. The famous Gemara that I must have quoted, I don't know how many times. Amar Ababa Gemara in Sanhedrin Tzadik Ches Amid Aleph, Folio 98. Omer Rababa, Rababa said, Ein l'cho keitz megulim, he said, there is no greater beginning of the period of end of days than this. And he quotes a pasuk in Yechezkel. The moment you'll see my hands going out like this, you will know already which pasuk I'm talking about. Va'atem hore Yisrael, you mountains of Israel, Ampechem titenu, give out your branches, ufer yechem tisu, and carry your fruit, la mi Yisrael, for my people Israel, ki careful of o, because the time of their return is coming close. You know what Yechezkel says? Before Jews even begin to return en masse to Eretz Yisrael, the land will already know. The land knows more than Mishpacha magazine. They knew 50 years before the establishment of the state that Jews are going to come home, and the land began to awaken from its 1900-year slumber. Even some of my children liked, there's a section of this post which is not written by me, but I gave space in my blog, or whatever you call it, I gave space to my tomato, and my tomato tells Mishpacha magazine a story. What a beautiful story. My tomato tells the story of Churban Bayit Sheni, the destruction of the Second Temple, when the word came down from God, stop growing. So pasuk in the Tochacha in Parshat Chukotai, God says, "Vahashimoti ani et haaretz, I will make the land desolate." And the Orach Chaim HaKadosh says, "Why does the pasuk say, "Vahashimoti ani et haaretz"? What happened? Well, who needed the ani? It could have simply said, "Vahashimoti et haaretz, I will make the land desolate." I will make it desolate. So the Orach Chaim says, in keeping with what Rashi, Ramban, the Sifri all say, that pasuk in middle of the curses in Parshat Chukotai is good news for the Jewish people. What's the good news? That no people will ever be able to settle this land during your long and extended absence. By the way, if somebody doesn't become a believer and a Shomer Torah mitzvahs simply from the fact that for 1900 years so many conquerors came and went from this country, they were never able to make it. You know why they were never able to make it? Because the Rabbeinu Shlomo had said, I'm making this land desolate. He told the tomatoes not to grow, and everything not to grow. And my tomato goes on and tells the story how the word went beneath the surface of Eretz Yisrael, from cedar to hyssop, from tomato to cucumber, from all the flora and fauna of Eretz Yisrael sent out the word, we're not growing. No more growing until further notice from heaven. And how sad they all were that their children had been sent into exile. And they waited. They waited. And during the 1900 years, there were moments at which they thought, I think it was in the 12th or the 13th century, word went to the tomatoes and the cucumbers, they're coming. And the word went through all of Eretz Yisrael, straight through, on the ground. You couldn't see it. By the way, you think I'm crazy? When I wrote it, I thought I was crazy, and I thought that I was making something up. But you know what I found out since then? You can do it. I found it. It started good. I got it in. It was an article in the Jerusalem Post, but then I went checking on it. They discovered recently, in the last few years, that plant life communicates. You're laughing at me? Don't laugh at gold, you understand? Go take a look and you'll find out that science has proven that they communicate. My wife and I know how birds communicate. I don't know how it works, but it certainly does. Every so often, I put out challah or bread on my porch. One bird comes flying, zooms down, and then just wait 4 or 5 minutes, 6 minutes, 10, 15, 20 birds are there. They're eating up everything on my porch. How do they know? They know. They communicate. So I said, here was the communication. They were told to stop growing. They were very sad about it. But every so often, they thought that maybe it's all over. Their children are coming home. In the 13th century, it was Rabbi Yechiel mi Paris, Rabbi Yechiel of Paris, had enough with the Frenchies, and he and 300 Bali Tosot came on Aliyah. And they thought, this is going to be it. Anyway, I don't have to tell you all the other periods during the 1900 years that they thought, they're coming home. And then at the end of the 19th and the beginning of the 20th century, word came down from heaven. The kinder are on their way home. And I describe how the roots and the branches of the trees started waking up from their 1900-year slumber. They started stretching and yawning, but with a tremendous sense of joy. And you know what happened? The Rebbe Shem told them, grow. They became a global agricultural power. I've told you often enough, just Google Israel agriculture and make sure you have your seatbelt on when you do it, because it's going to blow you away. A country where there was no agriculture for 1900 years is a global player. A people that didn't have an army for 1900 years, powerful army, strongest air force in the world, third strongest economy in the world. Well, we remember that you couldn't hold on to a shekel. If you didn't spend it now, it was going to be worth less 2 minutes from now. The 80s, you understand? And now, many of us made the same mistake. If we would have had our money in shekelim for the last 15 years, we'd be far ahead of the dollar, the euro, the pound, the peso, the lei, the ruble, the zloty. You see, you're talking, I'm a global man, you know. So what he doesn't get is, he thinks that there's Torah, and then there's another entity called the land, or the language. No. It's all one. It's all one. I could, of course, have shaken him up even more, but I think it'd be too much. He couldn't take it. If I would ask him the question, watch, if you want to see me called a koifer and an apokeiros, if I would ask the question, What was the ultimate purpose of the Exodus from Egypt? Everybody will say, in order to receive Torah at Sinai, right? So along comes the gold from Har-Nof and says, no, no. The ultimate objective of Yitziat Mitzrayim was to bring Jews to Eretz Yisrael. Oh, what are you talking about? How can you say something like that? How can you say something like that? I know I can't say it. I never say anything without proof. They all miss it. They all miss it. The last sentence in the story of the Exodus is a pasuk from Parshat Vaetchanan. In that last paragraph of Bechol Dor V'Dor Chayiv Adam Lirot Et Atzmo Ki'ilu Hu Yotzo Mimitzrayim, in every generation a man is supposed to see himself as though he went out of Egypt, it ends with V'nema, V'otanu Hotzi Misham, L'ma'an Havi Otanu El Ha'aretz. He took us out of there, Leman. The word Leman always means the ultimate goal and the objective. V'otanu hotzi misham Leman havi otanu el ha'aretz asher nishba la'avoteinu. He took us out of Egypt in order to bring us to Eretz Yisrael. Obviously, Eretz Yisrael has an instruction booklet. How are you supposed to conduct yourself in the land? On the way to Eretz Yisrael, we stopped at Sinai to pick up the instructions. But the goal was, and there is no other pasuk like that in Tanakh, that connects the Exodus from Egypt directly to coming into the land. Otanu hotzi misham, he took us out of there, leman havi otanu, in order to bring us to the land. There's no pasuk that says any place he took us out of Egypt in order to give us Torah. The closest it says is by the sned, God says, when you come out, you will serve God on this mountain at Sinai. Don't get me wrong, I'm all for Torah. I'm all for Torah. But Torah is the guidebook to Jewish conduct in Eretz Yisrael. The Ramban, Rashi, they say that the fulfillment of mitzvahs in Chutz Laretz is so that we should not forget them when we come back to Eretz Yisrael. Rashi and Chumash says it. The Ramban and Chumash says it. Fulfillment of mitzvahs in Chutz Laretz is on a completely different level. They say it, I didn't say it. I'm very happy they said it. All right, anyway, that's about this part. But the shir really is about what I think is a greater mistake than all. And this I didn't write about, so you're the first ones to find out about it. If you want to write it up and blog it around, go. I couldn't care less. I'm in so much trouble, I couldn't be in any worse trouble. And I love every minute of it. There's a piece that's underlined, and you know what? To make it easier for you, I put that piece in larger lettering right below. Go to the second. As for the notion of being the eighth strongest nation, there's a good case to be made that Israel is the single most vulnerable country on the planet, although it's a case I can't possibly expect Walter Russell Mead to grasp. Walter Russell Mead is the one who runs this think tank that has placed Israel as the eighth power in the world. So this fellow, Eitan Kobri, says, that dumb guy, he can't, what can he understand? What in heaven's name does he know? Query, question. This sentence, is there another nation whose very ability to remain in its land has been declared by God Almighty himself to depend on whether it's it upholds his moral standards? What he is saying, he's obviously referring to a pasuk in Sefer Vayikra, that if you don't keep the mitzvahs, the land will spit you out. It sounds frum, right? This is very religious talk. So I'm going to let you in on a secret. The Hashkafas HaTorah is completely different. And here I'm going to just repeat quickly a story that I told you some while ago. Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac HaLevi Herzog, the chief rabbi, was in the United States from December 1940 until about May of 41. He was there with his wife for a number of reasons. He was there to raise the consciousness of American Jewry to what he already saw is happening in Europe. They did not yet know about the crematoria. The world did not yet know about the plan for the final solution, even though I didn't catch it. Netanyahu, when he spoke at the Yom HaShoah, he says that they know now that in 42, by the end of 42, in other words, by August of 42, but the Regner telegram came, but it seems the Allies knew earlier of what was going on, the plan to destroy the Jewish people. So here is Rav Herzog and the Rebbetzin are in the United States to raise the consciousness of the Jewish community. He even met with Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the Geuser President of America. He was not very impressed with the Geuser President of America. He felt that he was cold and distant. But all right, in the newspapers they wrote how impressed he was with, that's enough for truth. I mean, the important thing is, and now the last few days I've been studying the history, I didn't have it perfectly set in my mind, but now I got it. There were two major campaigns by Rommel in North Africa. The first was in 41, and the second was in 42. In 41, he began his march or race across North Africa, getting nearly to the gates of Alexandria, which means Eretz Yisrael. Rav Herzog was in the United States. He told his rabbinic friends that he must get back to Eretz Yisrael now. They told him, you can't go now. The Atlantic is infested with submarines, Nazi submarines. Sakonis nefashis, you can't go. And I'm going to make it quick. He insisted, he met with Governor Lehman, we New Yorkers, Herbert Lehman, and they got him placed on a boat called the Robin Moore. And the morning the Robin Moore was supposed to leave, he gets a call that military personnel need his place. He's taken off the list. He can't go on the Robin Moore. He was very upset. He was afraid that there were people who didn't want him to go, and they were the ones who created this problem. Anyway, he insisted, and they finally got him onto another boat that was going to leave in a week or two, the New York. And one morning, a few days after the Robin Moore had left, by the way, the only way to get back to Eretz Yisrael was to go by boat all the way to Cape Town, the bottom of Africa. You couldn't cross the Atlantic. And then from Africa, from Cape Town, he would have to make it by every mode of transportation all the way up to Cairo, a whole continent, and then from Cairo by train to Rehovot. A few days after the Robin Moore left, his secretary comes walking in and throws a newspaper onto his desk. the Robin Moore was sunk, blown out of the sea by German submarine. So of course, then Rebbeleze Silva, who was the chief rabbi of America, came with a whole group of rabbanim and told him, "We paskin that Tukov is not allowed to go." Seems like Rav Herzog didn't get too shook up. He basically told them, "Listen, I'm an Israeli. I'm an Eretz Yisrael Yid. I'm not bound to your American Piskei Halachas." What he was really saying is that I paskin for me, and nobody paskins for me. But they wanted to know, why is he undertaking the journey that's so fraught with grave danger? And he said two reasons. Reason number one is that for a rabbi of Eretz Yisrael not to be with his people at the time of grave danger is Chilul Hashem. He has to be with them. And then the second reason is what we really have to talk about. He said that we have a Masorah, we have a tradition. There will be a first destruction, and there will be a second destruction. There will never be a third destruction of Eretz Yisrael. A first exile and a second exile, never a third. He was saying that the return of Klal Yisrael in the 20th century is for keeps. It's for good. It's eternal. It is totally independent of how Jews conduct themselves. Since Rav Herzog said this, so of course the literature that has been written to prove that what he said is absolutely so. It's so. And it's not difficult to find proof that our third entry into Eretz Yisrael, we don't have to worry. It doesn't mean that there may not be tragedies or attacks of some sort or another, but the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael is forever. That certainly is not what Mishpacha magazine is writing. Says, no. It's all dependent on how we're going to conduct ourselves. Not true. It's not dependent on that at all. Maharal writes it a number of times. That our presence here today is something that we say in Shmon Esrei. First brach of Shmon Esrei, Zocher Chasdei Avot. God remembers the kindness of the fathers, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Umevi, Goel, brings a redeemer, Livnei, Vineim, for their children, Leman, Shemo, for his name's sake. Totally independent of how we act. So now what I'm going to do is start bringing you a number of the proofs, as many as we can go through. This is a Yesod HaHashkafa. The exact opposite of what is written in the not so holy Mishpacha magazine. It's just not true. And this fellow was talking as though he is the voice of genuine Torah. And anybody who thinks otherwise is making a terrible, terrible mistake. Not so. Let's go. Begin the journey. Number two, Midrash Rabbah. Oh, boy. I better watch myself not to go off the deep end on this Midrash, because in our parasha shiur we talked about these psukim this year, just this past. This is from Parashas Miketz. You know, we don't have to read the whole thing. Just three lines before the wide lines. Vani kasher shacholti. In the story that's in Torah, the brothers have come back from Egypt. This fellow, Tzafnat Paneach, is holding Shimon captive. incarcerated. He will not be released until they come back with their little brother. They come back home and they tell this to Yaakov. Yaakov says, can't, I'm not letting him go. I can't let him go. Conversation ends there. And Yehuda already, according to the Mefarshim, Yehuda says, listen, let's wait until the hunger gets worse, and then we'll be able to talk to him. And then there's a second conversation. In the second conversation, Yaakov says to them, what did you do? Why did you tell him that you had a younger brother? So he said, what can we do? He asked us, do we have a father? Do we have a brother? So he says, Yaakov says to them, Ani kasher shocholti shochalti. As I was bereaved, I will be bereaved. Just as I was bereaved of Yosef, I will be bereaved of Shimon. Now look in the Medrash. Vani kasher shocholti. Three lines from the wide lines. Vani kasher shocholti b'kuben rishon, as I was bereaved by the first destruction, shocholti b'kurban sheni, I was bereaved by the second destruction. Kasher shocholti b'kurban rishon uvasheni, lo eshkal od. What happened to me, the bereavement of the first Beit HaMikdash and the second Beit HaMikdash, will never happen again. There's not going to be a third korban. That's all we need. Let's go to another medrash, a medrash Tanchuma. Right next, number three. The end of the third line, Dovar Acher. It's a pasuk in Zechariah that says, Vashlishit, the third, Yivaterba will remain. The third will remain. Look how clear it is. She'ein mityashvin b'artzam ela b'geula shlishis. Israel will not settle into the land until their third redemption, the third entry of Jews to Eretz Yisrael. That's us. Geula Shona, the first one, the first redemption is the geula from Egypt. Geula Shnia, the second, is geulat Ezra. Ezra coming back to build the second Beit HaMikdash. Hashlishit, the third time Jews come, ain lo hefsek. There is no end to it. Goes on into eternity. Let's turn over. The second side over here is... I take a great deal of joy and pride. One pasuk in Yechezkel, an awesome Rashi, and an amazing Malbim. And there's a little history to this too. What I'm going to tell you now, I had written up 27 years ago, and it was published in Hatzofer, a now defunct RZ newspaper, religious Zionist newspaper, even though in a sense it was picked up by the Mekor Rishon. It was published 2 weeks before the first Gulf War, 1991. I assumed that after what I had published, and then came the war, that following it, people would be coming, knocking at my door to give me kvitlach, to eat shchayim for my breakfast. And over the whole world just forgot about me. Now you're going to tell me whether they should have forgotten about me or not. Watch. Yechezkel is talking that toward the end of days, there will be a coalition of nations that will want to destroy Eretz Yisrael and exile Jews from the land. It's called the war of Gog and Magog. Many nations are coming up against Eretz Yisrael. So the Navi says the following: Miyamim rabim tipaked. After many years, you're going to be remembered. All the terrible things that you did to my people throughout history, you're going to be remembered and you're going to be punished. This is the way it's going to happen. Ba'acharit hashanim, toward the end of days or years, tavo, you're going to come up against Eretz Mishovevet Mecharev, a land whose people have returned from the sword. I'll explain everything. We will see that there are three groups of people in the country. Mishovevet Mecharev, those who have returned from the sword. There's a second group, Mikubetzet Me'amim Rabim, those who've been gathered in from amongst many people. And you know where they're going to be? They're going to be Al Hore Yisrael. They have been settled on the mountains of Israel, Asher Hoyu Lechor V'Tomid, that had always been desolate, but now they're not. Remember the pasuk that I quoted earlier? My tomato pasuk? Va'atem Hore Yisrael, mountains of Israel, give out your fruit because my people are coming. So he says, that here it is, you're going to come up against a land where there are people who've returned from the sword, those who've been gathered in from many nations, and they are on the mountains of Israel that had always been desolate, but they're not desolate now. V'hi me'amim hutza'ah. And she was taken out from amongst the nations. We will see the Malbim says. Malbim says they're the third group of people. The third group of people is a group of people who've been granted permission to leave the lands in which they lived. They had not received such permission until now. V'yoshvu lovetach kulam. You're coming up against them? I'm telling you, they're going to live in the land in security. Then the pasuk is going to go on to say, v'olita kashoah. You're going to come up like a Shoah against them. Shoah really means darkness. And you're going to want to destroy them all. Habibi, you don't know what's waiting for you. You're going to be crushed upon the mountains of Israel. Tavoka Anon, you're going to come like a cloud. Lechasot Haaretz, to cover the land. Tiata v'chol agapecho, you and all who come with you. V'amim rabim otach, and many nations with you. Then the pasuk, you have to see the Pesukim in Yecheskel over there, 38, chapter 38, where it describes the destruction of Gog, Magog, and all of those who attempt to touch a hair on yon Jewish head. Now let's take a look at the Rashi. Rashi, number 5. Miyom, the first line in Rashi, the middle, Miyomim Rabim Tipokeid. Miyomim Rabim, after many years, Shechotosoli, that you sinned against me, Tipokeid Ato, Lefonai, you have been remembered before me now, Lizkor Avonotecha, to remember your sins, Ulahoshiv Gemulcha, to repay you in full for what you did to my people, Va'ashiacha, I'm going to entice you. I'm going to seduce you to come up against their Eretz Yisrael to fight against them. Oh, Ashiacha ba'achrit hashanim lavo el Eretz Yisrael hamishuvevet mecherev. You're going to come up against the Eretz Yisrael who return from the sword. That first group are the nitzolei hashoah, those who have returned to Eretz Yisrael from the sword. You're going to come up against them? Sheshavu Yoshve ha-min ha-gola, those who return from the exile. Asher gol sham al-yedei cherev ha-oyev. Rashi is saying a different pshat, but I'm learning a modern pshat. Those who had to leave Eretz Yisrael because of the sword of the enemy, and I'm saying that it also includes those who've returned from the sword of the enemy and they have found refuge in Eretz Yisrael. You're going to come up against them? Asher hayu lecharva tamid, and they're now settled on the mountains of Israel that were always dry and destroyed. Zeshonim rabos. Many years it's been desolate. V'somoch lebo'acha. Historically near, close to the time that you're going to come, you know what they're doing? Lebo'acha la chazru. They're only recently returned to Eretz Yisrael after all of the years of their absence. Here comes Rashi. That you have to learn it bal peh. V'hi me'amim hu tzo'o. So Rashi says, listen to it, it's great. V'hoya l'chol asum alev. You should have thought about it. You should have paid attention. Shehi me'amim hu tzo'o. These people were taken out from the nations amongst which they lived. V'hamotzio min ha'amim, the one who took them out from amongst the nations, lo yazvenu b'yodecho, is not going to leave them in your hands. You think I brought my people back to Eretz Yisrael so they should fall into your hands? Is that why you think I turned heaven and earth to bring my people back? So they should be ready for good pickings for you to destroy? Chas v'sholem, you should have thought, ha'yelachol l'asum alev, you should have thought about it. The one who took them out from the nations, didn't take them out, so they should fall into your hands. The Malbim. There are three groups of people living in Eretz Yisrael. Mishovevet Mecharev. Mishovevet Mecharev. The second is Mekubetzet Me'amim Rabim, those who are gathered in from many nations. I see these two groups. The first, I said, are the Nitzilei HaShoah who have come here. The second, Jews from Arab lands. They were the main waves of Aliyah that came after the establishment of the state. Just stop for a moment to think if there'd still be Jews in Baghdad, you understand? In Syria, in Khalif. Hey. There'd be Jews in those Arab lands, there would have been a slaughter. Yeah, that's right. I took a cab last night. And it doesn't take long, you know, but after one block, you know exactly where the cab driver is from. Yelid Baghdad. He was born in Baghdad. Okay? I say, Habibi, what do you think would happen if you'd still be in Baghdad? Oh, what are you doing? It didn't occur to us 69 years ago that God is saving 750,000 Jews from certain death at the hands of the killers who now roam those lands. Shamu Shamayim. The third group, Vehime Amim Hutzah. Let's go to the Malbim. I'll tell you exactly where to look so you don't have to. Two lines before the white lines. Number six. Oh, you know what? Let's read the whole Malbim. We're not going to be able to get to the next two pages anyway, you know. I'll save them. I save all these things. You'll get it from me yet. Watch. Let's do that whole Malbim. Very first line, what it said before is that the time is coming that you should be punished. Magia lecha onesh al ma'asita miyomim rabim. all your anti-Semitism and your persecution of Jews for all these years, the time has come that you'll be punished for it. What you did in early years, that you were bad to Israel, the time has come for punishment. So you know what's going to happen? So the Bible says God is going to, he's going to manipulate things, and that's similar to Rashi. He's going to talk you into coming up to attack Eretz Yisrael. Oh boy, you don't know what's waiting for you. L'chein yisavev Hashem, God is going to cause shebachlit hashonim tavo el eretz mishovevet. At the end of years, you are going to come to a land, ritzon eloma, shehevdel bein biyatcha ata ubein biyatcha bimei kedem. There's going to be a big difference between the time that you attacked the Jewish people in Israel in earlier years and this time. Shoz Yeshu Yisrael Yomim Rab Malad Mosam. When you attacked Israel, then you attacked the people who lived for many years in the land. You're going to come up now against the people that have only recently returned here. Mishovevet, it's an eloma, okay? Mishovevet, Mikherev, Shacherev, Horgotomid Ba'amel. These are a people that the sword always killed. Jews were always suffering. Mukubetzet mi'amim rabim, gathered in from many nations. Sheshov u'migoliot rabot, returned from many exiles. That's exactly what's been going on over here. From many different countries. We're about here from 100 countries. V'nikbetzu la'artzom, they've gathered into their land. Mikol ha'amim ashonim, shehoyu mufuzarim misham, from all the nations where they were dispersed. That's us. That's absolutely us. Al Hore Yisrael, on the mountains of Israel, Asher Hoyu L'chor V'Tomid, V'Ata, now, listen to this. This sentence is a mind-blower. Mi Amim Hutzah, she's been taken out amongst the nations, Shehiniku Otam Latzeit Lihit Yashev Baretz. They let them go out and settle in the land. You know what was taking place in the months before the Gulf War? The Iron Curtain had collapsed. Plane loads of Jews were coming in from Russia. Vehi me'amim hutzah. They've just been given permission to leave. That's the third group. During the Gulf War, they were coming off the planes and they were given gas masks and a tudat zehut. So I wrote this pasuk with the Rashi and the Malbim, and I'm saying no harm will come to Israel from Iraq. We have all that the pasuk needs. Those who return from the sword, the Nitzolei HaShoah, the ones who've been gathered in for many nations, and right now there's a group that's just been given permission to leave. So nothing will happen. So now any Rebbe or Hashiva who said that, you know, nothing's going to happen and didn't have anything to base it on, they brought kvitlach. They ate their shirayim, walked around saying, God will be Israel. It's all right, I don't need the covered. I don't need the covered. I was just so thrilled that everything passed b'shalom b'shalva. But you know what this, you know what's being said over here? When these Jews return to Eretz Yisrael, the yoshvu lovetach kulam, the last three words in the pasuk, they will all live in security. What my good friend from Mishpacha magazine wrote is simply not true. It sounds frum, sounds very frum, but you know what it is? It's very krum. it's not true. It's just not true. And he's convinced that this is real Hashkafa Sator. It's wrong, just plain wrong. The next two pages are proof from at least 20 different places in Tanakh that the third return is for keeps. It's for good. There will not be another exile. But I've been looking around. I have in the house about a 600-700 page book. I will not call it a sefer, a book, called Derech Hatzola, The Way to Rescue. And the Derech Hatzola says that the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael, Chas V'Shalom, is going to be destroyed utterly, and Jews of Eretz Yisrael have to run quickly, quickly. We have to get out of here as quickly as possible. It was a gift from one of my sons-in-law. He knew exactly what would aggravate me, you understand? No, I can't find it. I was reading it recently. I'm going to find it. You know, sometimes when I'm looking for something in my study or in all the four or five places in the house where we have Svarim, like, it can be right there in front of me and you don't see it. And then all of a sudden, there it is. It's right in front of me. The purpose of this shiur was what Rav Herzog said is true. But what was great about Rav Herzog was that he didn't simply believe it. He put his life on the line. He wasn't sitting in Far Rockaway talking Hashkafa. He went on to the high seas, and it was a nest that boat arrived in Cape Town. Oh, and then what happened from Cape Town until he got to Eretz Yisrael? It's a story. If they say that truth is stranger than fiction, I'm telling you. I forgot to turn. Me? No, it's the second time it happened to me in 50 years. Okay. Anyway, there were two planes a week that left from South Africa to Cairo. And from Cairo, he could take a train to Eretz Yisrael. You know, there were trains between Egypt and Eretz Yisrael. To get onto one of those flights, when nearly all places were taken by military personnel going from one place to the next, he had to end up meeting with General Smuts, the Ohev Yisrael, Prime Minister of South Africa, who promised to get him and the Rebbetzin onto a plane. And they got him onto a plane. There was engine trouble, so they had to stop in Mozambique. Mozambique, till they fixed it, it was Shabbos and was taking off on Shabbos. He had to stay in Mozambique, not knowing when anything will happen. All of a sudden, a day later, another plane comes in from nowhere, most probably flown by Eliyahu Hanavi on its way to Cairo. He stops at least three, four times in Sudan. What he went through, it's unbelievable what the two of them went through, till finally they got onto that train in Cairo. And then comes the most beautiful part of the story. As the train is going, Rav Herzog opens up the window, and he stands by the window. And the Rebbetzin asks him, why are you doing that? I'll be able to smell the air of Eretz Yisrael as we cross into it. I want to feel it. That wiped me out. He would know the moment at which he had moved from Chutz Laaretz into Eretz Yisrael. The train arrived in Rehovot, and in Rehovot there was a gathering of Jewish leaders of course, all of Eretz Yisrael, they were following his journey. The Rav is coming home. And there in Rehovot, he said it clearly again. And what a chance he took. He was taking a big chance, except, but he knew. He said there will be a first Churban and a second Churban. There will never be a third Churban. He said the enemy will not set foot in Eretz Yisrael. Lo yovo tzar v'oyev. He will not set foot. How did he know that the great battle that would take place the following year, the second battle of El Alamein, would be the first defeat of Hitler in the Second World War, about which Churchill said, until El Alamein, there was no victory. After El Alamein, there was no defeat. That's Hashkafa. When you're ready to live the Hashkafa, you understand? First Churban, second Churban, no third. We're going to be okay. We're going to be okay. The Malbin says this in many places. Tanakh, we'll save it. I'll find another time. Wait till they start attacking me. Who knows? I don't know yet what will happen when I open up my mishpacha this week on.